everyone, and welcome to Connected Roots, Educational Insights for a Better World. This podcast is a collective effort brought to you by the Humane Education Coalition. Connected Roots features inspiring interviews and stories from experts in the field of humane education. I'm your host, Megan Moon, president and founder of the Coalition. We are a global alliance for collective impact. We collaborate with education partners in human rights, environmental ethics, and animal protection to achieve common goals and support their work. You can learn more at hecoalition.org. On today's episode, we welcome Liz Walsh from Food for Thought, a program of Animal Place. Food for Thought helps animal and environmental nonprofits adopt animal and earth-friendly menu policies for fundraising and sponsored events. The Food for Thought campaign can help align your organization's menu with its mission by adopting a formal policy regarding the types of food it serves or doesn't serve. Hey Liz, welcome to Connected Roots, and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we're just so excited to get a chance to talk with you about Food for Thought, a newer partner at the Coalition. Just delighted to have you involved. Why don't we start with just explaining what the Food for Thought campaign is and why Animal Place chose to create a program like this?
Yeah, so the history goes back quite a few years, actually. We are a program of Animal Place, which is a farmed animal sanctuary just outside of Sacramento, California. And our executive director, Kim Sterla, she saw that there was this disconnect in the companion animal sheltering community. So a long time ago, there was this little piglet, Zelda, who was rescued and was temporarily being held at a shelter. Everybody loves piglets, so of course everybody fell in love with her, and they decided, like, okay, when we find a home for Zelda, we want to make sure she goes to her forever home where she can live out the rest of her life, be happy, be free, and not be adopted by someone who would kill her and eat her. That same shelter was serving ham at a fundraiser that they were putting on to raise money. So this was the disconnect that Kim was seeing. And from that, she decided to launch the Food for Thought program. First, she started out reaching out to her colleagues in different shelters. But as our current campaign is now with 4 to 5 paid staff, that's been going on for about the past 5 years or so.
Wow, that's a lot of growth. That's fantastic, Liz.
Yeah, we've been growing very quickly, even in the past 3 years that I've been working on the campaign. And then so to go back and answer, you know, what does Food for Thought do? So we have different coordinators in the U.S., and we reach out to any animal shelter, wildlife rescue, animal sanctuary, and environmental protection organization. And we ask them, hey, do you have a policy to serve vegan food at your events? And that can either be an informal policy, you know, so practice that everybody just knows that they do it, or it's a formal board-approved policy that's part of their policies in their organization. And if they say yes, they do have a policy, then great, we're happy to hear that. And we do list that organization on what we call our policy leaders page on our website. And we also feature them on social media just to highlight them and the fact that they've made this step to only serve vegan food at their events. If they say no, that they don't have a policy, we continue to communicate with them and gauge, you know, how interested they are on creating a policy like this. And based on their concerns they have or their needs or different questions, we provide them with all this information that we have, resources that we have for them. We even give them sample policy language that they can use to create their own policy. We do want to make it so that it's unique to the needs and the practices and the community of that organization. So we have all sorts of language that they can pull from, pick and choose to create something that works for them. We see that this change, it doesn't happen overnight. Very rarely do they just flip in a second and create a policy on the spot. So from there, we do want to continue to maintain contact with them. And we do like occasional check-ins to see if they're still interested, if they're moving a little bit closer to creating a policy, and just kind of addressing any sort of needs that they might have. an organization whose mission it is to promote animal protection or environmental protection, they would be the most likely to understand that farmed animals, that they suffer, and that animal agriculture is very destructive to the environment. Even if a shelter's job isn't to rescue cows, for example, it would follow that based on their values and their mission of compassion for animals and reducing suffering from animals, that they would want their organization's policies and practices to at least not serve animals as food, because these animals have experienced suffering to create the food for that event. Unfortunately, that connection is not made with some people, even within the animal protection and the environmental protection communities. We see our job should be to educate people and to help them make that positive change, you know, by giving them guidance and support and resources.
You know, I'm really grateful for your guidance, because we actually took advantage of the opportunity at the Humane Education Coalition just a few months ago to create a menu policy for our organization. And it was an incredible process for our board and a real eye-opener and learning experience for a lot of our leadership. And so I can share from my experience how great your support through that process is. How many other organizations have created a menu policy with your guidance?
So far, we have identified 387 policies. 121 of those are new policies that were created because of our outreach.
How exciting. And this is still a growing campaign, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. We have so many plans, so much growth coming down the line. We're really excited.
So let's talk about how Food for Thought supports the field of humane education itself. And I know you touched on a lot of those issues in your previous response, but I just wonder how you think Food for Thought is connected to the field, and how does humane education impact your work?
Yeah, so I have humane education background, my master's from IHE. I've worked with HEART, which is a humane ed organization. So I love humane education. So when I saw a chance to work on this campaign, you know, little alarm bells went off, because I could see that there was definitely an opportunity for humane education and humane communication to be used. And I guess the short answer is all of us on the campaign, we're working to create a more humane world and a more sustainable world. But of course, the long answer is that we are run out of a farmed animal sanctuary, which means that we do advocate for the victims of animal agriculture. And of course, this means farmed animals, but we also view the issues caused by animal agriculture to be intersectional. So we see that it affects the environment and affects people as well, and all those issues are connected. So this is why we, a couple of years ago, expanded our program to include reaching out to environmental organizations. And most recently, just since this past summer, we've begun to explore reaching out to social justice organizations and those more based in working for human rights. So we see our work, it's contributing to, you know, more humane, peaceful, and sustainable world. We also are solutions-based, which is kind of a tenet of humane education. So instead of like busting in and sending all these emails just talking about the horrors of factory farming and then running away without anything else, instead we stay and we talk to people. We see, you know, what we can do to help them actually take an action to help this, or at the very least stop participating in the harm caused by animal agriculture by, you know, not buying the products from there. We know that the people in these organizations, they already do like a ton of really great work. A lot of good gets done. We support it. We really appreciate it. But we're coming in just suggesting one more thing that they could do to increase that good, you know, to do more of that good by having the vegan menu policy. You know, we know creating this policy isn't going to change the world overnight, but at least it's the one thing that they can do to contribute to just creating that more humane or sustainable world. And kind of like I mentioned before, you know, I see how humane communication can be used in this outreach. You know, when we reach out to people, we aren't like scathingly judgmental or accusatory. Instead, what we want to do is come from a place of encouragement and understanding. You know, we don't tell them like, hey, you got to do this right now. Instead, we say, hey, so what's holding you back from creating a policy? Do you know why you should create a policy? How can we help? What resources do you need? Okay, you're not ready to make it yet. Well, okay, we'll reach back out to you in a few months and see how else we can help. Because I think that any vegan advocate knows that strong arming people just doesn't work to create change. So instead, with this program, we focus on that relationship building so we can continue to work with the organizations until they're ready to create a policy. We do see our work as advocacy as well. And I know that sometimes the methods and the tones between, you know, what is typically humane education and what's typically advocacy, sometimes those don't match up. But I mean, I don't see humane ed and advocacy being mutually exclusive. And I think they can go hand in hand really well. Like I said, that's why I was attracted to work on this program. That being said, from our advocacy side, we do say out of the three options of having a meat-filled menu, a vegetarian menu, or a vegan menu, we believe that the vegan menu is the most humane and the most in line with an animal rescue's mission. Honestly, though, at the end of the day, it's just up to them to make the change. And we just try to be there and support them and provide them with as much education as they need to make that change.
Liz, what would you say to an organization that is interested in a menu policy, but maybe they're in a rural or remote community, or they're concerned about pushback from their supporters? What would you say to those types of organizations?
We hear this a lot. We hear these concerns a lot. So we've put a lot of thought into, you know, what we would want to convey to them. And there's a few different things. We do want organizations and their leadership and the people who work there and even volunteer there. We want them to remember why they got into animal protection in the first place. And it's probably because that they recognize that non-human animals, they're thinking, they're feeling beings, and they deserve compassion and respect. But the key word here is animals. So it's not just cats or dogs or elephants or tigers. It's all animals. And so that includes farmed animals as well. And actually, when you look at a lot of mission statements of like a typical humane society, for example, they do use the word animal. So, you know, their mission is to reduce the suffering of animals, to increase compassion for animals. And so, again, that has to include farmed animals as well. These organizations are the humane leaders in their community. People look to them to see how they should treat animals. And if this organization is serving animals as food at their events, then it signals to the public that farmed animals are less deserving, or maybe even not deserving at all, of compassion. And, you know, we know that that's just not true. So we encourage them to think of themselves as humane leaders, and taking this step is another way to demonstrate that. And also, you know, their supporters, they come to their events and they donate and they volunteer because they support this organization's mission. They believe in it. They want to help out. They don't come to the events or donate just because that organization, you know, feeds them meat for a couple of meals per year. Anyway, I mean, this is about the organization's policies and practices. It's not about dictating what those supporters should eat at the 1,000 other meals that they eat at home throughout the year. I know that organizations, they don't consider themselves farmed animal advocates. They don't consider themselves vegan advocates, but that isn't their job. And that's what not what they're doing. They're not telling their supporters they have to be vegan when they go home. They're just saying, hey, you know what? Within our walls, we believe in this. We don't want to serve animals as food. So this is what we're going to do at our event. It's as simple as that. And also, people generally recognize the hypocrisy and the inconsistency of this. I go to these conferences a lot, and time again, I've actually met people and talked with people who even themselves still eat meat, and even they understand and accept and would support an animal rescue having a vegan menu policy. So I think honestly that people are more understanding and accepting than leadership might give them credit for. I know it's a scary thing to make a change, but it's still a positive change that I think they wouldn't get as much pushback as they think or that they're afraid of. I like to think of the analogy of an organization who, for example, fights for workers' rights, but then let's say that they purchase t-shirts that were made in a sweatshop to raffle off at a fundraiser. That just doesn't make sense. And people recognize that inconsistency between that org's mission and then their practice. Even if a member of the public doesn't always check that the clothing that they get from a big box store isn't made in sweatshops, at the very least, they would be able to recognize that a workers' rights organization shouldn't be knowingly purchasing materials from sweatshops. An organization whose purpose is to increase compassion for animals, reduce suffering for animals, shouldn't knowingly purchase products, you know, in this case, the animals themselves after they've been killed, to serve as food because those animals have suffered. It just doesn't make sense. And I know I mentioned sheltering a lot because I do work on that side of the program, but all of this, it goes the same for environmental organizations. Animal agriculture is a major contributor of climate change, uses up a lot of water, pollutes water, contributes to deforestation, loss of biodiversity, all that. So for them, again, it doesn't make sense for an organization that fights for the environment to serve up a meal that is, you know, made up of food that heavily contributed to the problems that they're trying to fight. It's about recognizing you don't have to be a vegan advocate for everybody else who comes to the events. And there are going to be some people who complain. That's normal. But there's going to be some people who complain when meat is also served at events. So honestly, I mean, you're never going to make anyone happy all the time. If that's the outcome, no matter what, why not create a policy that is more consistent with the organization's values of compassion and respect and protection for animals? Speaking of donations and donors, there are people who specifically will not donate to an animal shelter if that shelter serves meat at their events. So creating a vegan policy might actually attract supporters as well. I get the concern, but I think there's just so many good benefits to adopting the policy. And this is just the way that the movement is going. Status quo is changing. So we just want to encourage people to make the change now and join the Cool Kids Club.
Yes, very good points. Thank you, Liz. In addition to humane organizational policies, I know Food for Thought also offers some grants. Could you tell me more about those grants and who could apply, just so our listeners can better understand these kinds of opportunities?
Yeah, we love our grants programs. We love talking about them. So there's three different grants. The first one we call our policy grant. If an organization creates new policy, and not just creates it, but gets it board approved, and if they do that anytime from now over the past year even, they can get a grant for $1,000 for a vegan policy. For a vegetarian policy, we have a grant for $250. Organizations don't have to wait to create a policy until they hear from us. You know, we hear from organizations, they're like, oh yeah, we did that like 6 months ago. And we're like, well, heck, we're going to give you a grant anyway. So, you know, we want to reward these organizations for making that change. The other two grants, we actually just started a year ago, because what we kept hearing was organizations are like, yeah, you know, we get it. We're kind of interested, but ooh, we don't know about, you know, having a vegan event. We're kind of concerned about it. What would we do? You know, we don't want it to be a flop. So we're like, okay, how can we encourage them to have an event that's a little bit more risk-free? So we started our vegan event grant. If an organization wants to try a vegan event for the first time, we will reimburse them up to $1,000 for the food that they serve. So it's a way for them to buy a ton of yummy food, try it out, and then hopefully they see it's a success, the world didn't explode, and then that might encourage them a little bit more to be like, oh yeah, that wasn't so bad. Maybe we should create a policy. And then our third grant, it's a bit of a spin on that. It's called our ticket subsidy grant. This is for organizations who are having like a gala, for example, so like a larger sit-down meal option type event. If they have a vegan option, so it doesn't even have to be a whole vegan event, but if they have a vegan option, and if they promote that vegan option, and they price it at 50% off, which will hopefully encourage people to try it out, we reimburse that organization, again, up to $1,000 for the other 50% of that meal price. So they wouldn't have lost any money, but hopefully more people, you know, are encouraged to try the vegan option. Some of the criteria, we do want you to be a 501c3 organization. This does have to be your first vegan event because we want to encourage it for those, you know, who haven't tried it out yet. We want it to be totally new for you. We do prioritize organizations with like brick and mortar locations who do regularly hold events just so that the vegan event can reach more people. But honestly, we just tell people, or we encourage everybody, just apply. We want to see your application. We want to hear from you. Just apply and see what happens. The application, you know, it's not that long. So we always want to hear from people and see what sort of events they're holding.
Well, I know many of our listeners will be thrilled to learn about these grant opportunities and to learn how they can get involved. So how can our listeners get started? What resources do you have available to support them in their menu policy development and so on and so forth today?
So we have four different coordinators around the U.S. Our individual contact info is on our website, which is foodforthoughtcampaign.org. And you can send us an email, say you're interested, let us know what questions you have, what you need from us, what your organization culture is like, and we can help you. If you want to do a little bit of reading and some research first, we do have a ton of resources up on our website. So we have things like the sample policies, like I mentioned, we have those reasons why they should adopt a policy. We do have information on like why vegan too, like why are we promoting the vegan policy. We have talking tips of how to talk to your organization's leadership in case, like, let's say you volunteer at an organization and you want to talk to someone about it, like the shelter manager. We can tell you how to bring it up and what information to give, answer some FAQs. We also have some testimonials from different shelter leadership, environmental organization leadership, community members who support these types of orgs, and even a couple of like celebrities. And we have these testimonials because we want people, you know, not just to take our word for it, to quote LeVar Burton, but we want them to hear from their peers. We want them to hear from the community members who would be supporting them if they created this policy. I will mention too, even if your organization doesn't hold events that serve food, we still do want to hear from you because we still like to feature organizations that support this and like would create a policy, even if they don't have events right now. Because you never know. I mean, organizations grow. One day they might want to have a fundraiser. So it's better to just have the policy on the books before you need it. It makes things so much easier. And also, I am the volunteer coordinator of this program. So I'll do a little plug for the volunteer program if you want to help out. As long as you have a computer and an internet connection, you can be from anywhere around the world. We have all sorts of projects, and you can also apply for a website and I can reach out to you and see what you can help with. And then also we have our advocate network. If you would want to join that just to get occasional action alerts for us to hear like small bits of advocacy that you could help out with. So there's a lot of ways to get involved, even if you don't work for an organization or volunteer for an organization.
Perfect. And I second what you just said about organizations that might be interested, but maybe they don't hold regular in-person events. We created the policy at the Coalition, although we don't have many in-person events, but we may hold them down the road, as well as, you know, board development meetings and other types of events and meetings with our partners. And so it's a great blanket menu policy that covers all types of events, even if it's not a fundraising event.
Yeah, exactly. When you mentioned this before, you said it opened up some really interesting conversations with your board. And, you know, that's kind of like another benefit, because there are people who they don't even think about a menu policy, like you mentioned. So that really kind of gets the conversation started, even if a policy isn't made right away. That's what we want. We want people to talk about it and to think about it, just to get those wheels turning.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, Liz, for joining me on Connected Roots today. It's wonderful to partner with Animal Place's Food for Thought program, and we hope we can continue to send our partners your way for humane menu policies and grant opportunities and much, much more. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We want to hear from everybody. Thanks for having me, Megan.
As Liz mentioned, you can learn more about Food for Thought at their website, foodforthoughtcampaign.org. You can also find them on Facebook and Twitter at the handle Food for Thought Campaign. This concludes our episode of Connected Roots. Thanks for tuning in. Visit or subscribe to our podcast at hecoalition.org/podcast for news, heartfelt stories, educational experiences, and moments of kindness from changemakers around the world. Please also consider sponsoring our podcast. Your sponsorship allows us to continue this educational program for our global network of listeners who rely on the resources we share. Visit hecoalition.org/give for details. Thanks again for listening to Connected Roots, and thank you for all you do to create a more compassionate, equitable, and regenerative future.